Hello, my name is Quentin, and I am interviewing
Dan Call,
and I am a junior, and we are at Franklin Pierce High School on Friday, January 7th, 1:34 p.m. Okay, so my first question is, how long have you lived in the area of Tacoma, or for Puyallup?
Altogether, I've lived here now for 15 years,
okay.
3 years in 2004, and then we moved away in 2007, and I moved back in 2010, so this is, my 15th year.
How do you like the area so far?
I really like it, both for the climate. I love the trees, the clouds, the relative lack of snow compared to where I came from, but I also love the diversity of this area.
You mentioned relative lack of snow. We just got like 4 inches of it.
Yeah, but that's nothing compared to what I grew up with in Utah, where like we'd have 3-4 months of snow a year.
Yeah.
Dang. Yeah.
What is something from your culture / home? Does it still record? Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. What is something from your culture / homeland that you wish people here in Tacoma or where you've been practiced?
With my Chilean roots, I really wish that we had a lot more of the sense of hospitality or like the sense of duty to strangers.
Yeah.
There's even like one of the most popular songs in Chile talks about this is how we treat strangers. It's like a line in the song. And the way that they do like is just you treat strangers as the most respected guests. And so like the example I always think of is that in Chile, when you serve a glass of water to someone, you put it on a plate and you bring it out to them. And if you have to touch it, they always say, please excuse the hand, if you touch the cup.
Yeah.
Because they just want you to feel very honored and welcome there. Once I was walking down the street on a summer day and I asked somebody who was watering his bushes, like, could I just take a sip of water from your hose?
Yeah.
And he shook his head, sat down, and said, wait here. And he went inside and came back with a glass of water for me on a plate. And I was like, okay, I guess if you want to do that. And it kind of bothered me a little bit that he was going to so much trouble for me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, what if we had that kind of attitude towards anyone that we saw here, that we treat them in that same way?
Well, what do you think it would be like if people here in Tacoma or this area had that same hospitality?
I think, number one, that we would have probably like a lot more, institutionally, I think that on the streets, in these parks, we would see a lot more parks. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I would love to see a lot less graffiti going up in some places where that is. I'd also love to see us maybe do a better job of taking care of the poor or the homeless in this area. We do have a lot of good institutions, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think that we would be more serious about getting things done for them.
Since you told me that, we'll answer this question for both when you visited Chile and your where you reside now. Have you ever experienced discrimination and or oppression in school, work, or community, in Chile or here as well?
Yeah, here, since I grew up in the United States, the first experience that I remember was when I was 5 years old. And there was another kid on the block who I was playing with, but my mom called me to go back. This was like on a Saturday evening, I remember. She called me from way down the block, and I said, okay, I gotta go. And he said, don't go yet. And he kept saying, don't go. And I was like, I gotta go, my mom's calling me. And he finally used the N-word on me when I was 5 years old. And it was the first time I remember hearing it. Where does a 5-year-old kid learn that word, right?
Yeah.
And I have given it some thought, and I think that it was probably just something he heard his parents using to talk to other people in a way that was demeaning. Anyways, it stuck with me, and that was the first time. The other formative experience when I was in school, I remember talking with my 5th grade teacher once, and he wanted to know about my background. We just moved into the school. And this teacher was asking me questions about my background, and I was telling him that my mom was from Chile, which is how I always heard her say it, as well as my father. They just said Chile. And I didn't know that a lot of English speakers say chili instead.
Yeah.
Chili to me was like a bowl of beans and ground beef that you get from Nally. So he stopped me when I said my mom is from Chile. He stopped me, held up his hand, and said, it's pronounced chili. And I thought, okay, but I went on, and the next time again when I said Chile, he once again stopped me. I'll never forget that. Like, he wasn't, I think, trying to be insensitive. He maybe had my best thought in mind, thinking he needs to learn to speak like an English speaker.
Yeah. He just thought you were saying it wrong, which in reality you weren't.
Right. It's just a clash of different ideas about how to say something, but it really stuck with me. And as a teacher, I myself have constantly looked at my teaching and said, have I ever interacted with students in a way that make them feel insecure or less than about their own home language, their family's experiences?
Yeah, you make people, the way you teach, you make people speak out about it too.
Cool. That's what I'm hoping for.
From being in your class, I can tell that you embrace your culture, which is amazing, and it makes people feel warm and comfortable. But what role does it play for you, your culture or other people's cultures?
Thanks. I mean, it teaches me, of course, my own history, my own past. And I think that a people without a past is a people with amnesia. Like, if you don't know your past, then there's these other identities that corporations or companies or other people have ready-made for us to consume, because you need an identity of some sort. And that's why we see a lot of people with consumer identities. I think that it's not bad, for instance, to say I'm going to dress like this group of kids over here, or I really like that. But I think that we have an identity that our ancestors have given to us, and it doesn't have to be the only thing that we are, that we do. So if you want to wear Naruto clothes or something like that, I mean, that's fine, but we should keep in mind too, like, where we came from. And my culture, for me at least, serves that purpose, that it teaches me how to be in the world, how to be in relation to other people, how to be in relation to the earth. And so, like, I guess one example of that, the Chilean culture, one thing that I was used to seeing a lot was older people who were retired would just walk around the neighborhood looking at stuff and picking up garbage, and oftentimes chatting with people and keeping an eye out for strangers in the neighborhood, you know, and there was a sense of community that they kept in place, and I really liked that a lot. They would even, like, you know how, like, sometimes here, I think they say, they'll use Miss or Mr. before their first name, right? We usually will say, like, Mr. Call for me, but if it's a respected adult, you use their first name, and you'd say, like, Miss Jamie.
Yeah.
They'll do that in Chile as well, but they use Don and Doña.
Okay.
And it's a title that you only give to the most respected people.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
What was your childhood like? How did your childhood differ from what you experienced, or your kids? How did it differ from children today?
I spent a lot more time outside, unsupervised. I got into a lot of danger. I nearly killed myself a couple of times.
Like, just playing outside?
Yeah, just on accidents. I fell out of a tree once and could have broken some bones, but didn't. We grew up near a military base, so there was a lot of things. Let's just say that one day my friend and I found a rifle shell that was about that size. It was a shotgun shell. We needed to blow this thing up. You know, I was like 7 years old. So we got a hammer and started like smashing this thing, thinking it'd be cool if it made like a pop, an explosion. Oh, we've got some, we're picking up the recycling now. So, hi there. So we hammered this thing probably like 6 or 7 times on a rock, thinking we need to make this thing blow up like fireworks. And it wasn't until later on, like, and we didn't get it to go off, but somebody told us that thing could have killed you, you know. It could have.
The beads, there's like 100 of them in it. They destroy your everything.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And so I think, thank you. I guess my childhood was filled with a lot more danger. And compared with my own kids, I lament that I might have taken away some of that from them. But we also have raised kids in an internet age where we can see on a map, for instance, like where the sex predators live in this area within a 1 mile radius.
Yeah.
And also this area, one thing that I do dislike about this area is that there's just not sidewalks.
Yeah, there's so, not a lot. That's don't want to intrude, but yeah, I told you I came from Seattle. There's sidewalks and buses everywhere. Here, there's like none for miles. I'm like, dang. But there'll be a school. Like, for instance, here, when you leave the school, like when you take a right, there's no sidewalks until you get to the intersection by the QFC, and it just amazes me. I was like, oh.
And okay. So, like, to send my kids walking down the street if they want to go somewhere, I have to think, are they going to be in a spot where, like, a car might hit them? Or I don't know. So.
But there, it also is very unsafe nowadays, too. Just, I mean, it was probably unsafe then, but I guess you grew up where you knew the right from wrong, but a lot of kids are sheltered now to the point where they don't really know right from wrong in some aspects of a predator or just, I guess, keeping themselves safe.
So I've tried to give my kids opportunities on their own, too, like dropping them off places sometimes in parks or leaving them in certain spots and saying, hey, dropping them off at the supermarket and saying, here's $15, go in and I need you to find this, this, and this. So they have that experience of interacting on their own in public, but it's still not the same.
It's just a new era or a new age for people, so you can't really blame yourself or feel bad about it. You just got to raise your kids how you raise them.
Yeah, that's true.
I asked you this the first time, too, and I want to hear your answer this time as well. How do you feel about participating in the National Anthem or the Pledge of Allegiance?
Very mixed feelings. I did it unquestioning when I was growing up because I was a Cub Scout and an Eagle Scout in Boy Scouts of America. But now that we are it's been enforced by the state that we're supposed to be doing the Pledge of Allegiance on a daily basis in schools. And I remember when we would do the pledge, I used to ask people to stand for it. I never pushed or insisted that anyone did, but I used to ask them to stand for it. And I'm glad that I don't have to do that anymore. I don't. Yeah. I usually stand for it, but I don't place my hand over my heart because I feel, number one, the flag itself to me is a symbol. And a symbol stands in place of something else, right, for an idea. Yeah. So for me, it's the people. It's the ideas and the values that we have in this country. And to me, to pledge allegiance to the flag, like, why not pledge allegiance to another symbol? Like, I pledge allegiance to the alphabet, or I pledge allegiance to the Bible. You know, these are symbols for other things.
Yeah.
And so I'm not super enthusiastic about it, and especially knowing how this country has treated people of color, and how it's treating the planet, the environment itself. I will stand and look at the flag while that's happening. But for me, the standing isn't out of respect as much as standing like as a power pose to look at it and to think and reflect myself on what I want out of this country and what it's doing for me and for others. And so that's just 30 seconds a day that I'll take to do that. But I see it as productive for me, but just maybe not in the way that the lawmakers who pushed me to do it were hoping.
Yeah. Do you think how you were raised or how other people were raised, that you say you stand for the pledge, but you don't put your hand over your heart?
Yeah.
Or over your chest? Do you feel that's just how you're raised? Like, you just need to respect the flag? Or not need to, but have... I don't want to say obligated either, but that's obligated to stand for it, but you also don't want to, do you feel how you were raised and where you were raised, you're obligated to stand for the flag and look at it and respect it as a symbol?
I definitely think that the practice and years of doing it created in me at least some sense that I should join in, right? And I guess that's my thing, like, because at first I wasn't critical about it, I just did it. And the different responses then are to do it the way that they had intended, to not do it, or to do it but to subvert the practice. And that for me, like, I feel like I want to be part of something. I think that as a country, we do need some common practices, right? So like with English, for instance, I wish that everyone who wants to learn English could have the chance to do it. But I'm not going to insist that people speak English. If they don't want to, and in their homes or in schools or in public, they shouldn't have to speak English. But to have some kind of a common language, I would love for everyone to have the chance to learn it if that's what they want. And the same with the pledge. I feel like it gives us regardless of how we feel about the flag, it gives us the chance to participate in something together. But I'm really cool, like, if somebody wants to take a knee during the pledge, I love that. If somebody, if somebody wants to raise a fist during the pledge or during the national anthem, absolutely. Let them do that, because they're participating in it in some way, even though others will say, well, that's not how you should do it.
Yeah.
But I see it as participation and subversion of something to say, this is what it means to me, or this is how I choose to join in.
Yeah, I just want to add in too, when people do that, you know, there's a lot of controversy with Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
Never understood it. Never understood the conflict with it. I mean, yes, it was a big thing back then because everything wasn't all out in the open.
Yeah.
But he was, he was kneeling, but he was standing for what he believes, which is why I was like, totally. Anybody else could do it, but it was because he was a national icon. He was one of the best quarterbacks in the league. The NFL is all about Americans and all that, American flag and all that stuff. So I just never understood it. It just baffles me because if I was a quarterback and I stood for something, I would kneel or I would put my fist up or I would, et cetera, et cetera, all types of stuff. It makes no sense to me why people should argue with a man who believes in things that he feels are right.
It's very baffling to me too. I don't know. I mean, no. Let's just move on. Next question.
You lived in. Okay. You told me that your ancestry is in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
What is your relationship with your ancestral language or language from your homeland?
Thank you. I mean, it's layered, I should say, because Spanish being one aspect of that. My mother grew up speaking Spanish, and I heard it because my parents spoke it to each other while they were raising us. And so when I started studying it in school and then I had the chance to live in Chile, it got a lot stronger. I realized and came to learn that Aymara is the indigenous language that my mother's ancestors spoke, and that the Spanish conquerors, the colonists, came in and tried to stamp it out, the same way as like what happened here in North America, right? And so that's something that like is kind of troublesome for me, because as a teacher of Spanish, and as a great lover of the Spanish language, and as somebody who took pride in exploring everything that both like Spanish in general, but Chilean Spanish also came to offer me, I have to come to reconcile with the fact that Spanish itself was a colonizer's language. And that it was used in a way that was meant to wipe out people and culture. And so I've been trying to study a little bit of Aymara. It's really hard since it's, Spanish is a lot more similar to English, and you can see some common roots with Latin.
Yeah.
Aymara has no such...
like a language that has no Latin in it?
Oh, I mean, it does, only because it's absorbed some Spanish.
Yeah.
And so, like, some words, for instance, the word for bank in Spanish is banco, and in Aymara they use the word huanco.
Oh, okay.
Because there was no bank in their culture before the arrival of the Spanish.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that the colonizers themselves brought that Aymara has had to absorb to be able to participate at all. And as I've been trying to learn to speak some, I am able to identify, this word probably had some Spanish influence to it. Whereas, what were some of the words that were like pure Aymara? And like I say, it's been really hard. It's tiring because I don't have people that I can practice with a lot.
Yeah.
But it's a pursuit of mine.
You remember that movie you watched? What was it?
Thinking of... Walkout?
Walkout, yes. Have you ever been restricted of your own language in school, as those two boys were when we watched that scene where he was like, what I say about Spanish? Have you ever been restricted in that way in a school environment or work environment or just a community altogether?
Yeah. I've never been formally restricted by like an adult figure or an authority figure.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Like I can say that that's never happened. I have been challenged by other adults, like at church. My family and I, when we sing from the hymns, and there's a hymnal that's in English in our church, but we are able to download a copy of it in Spanish to our phones, and we'll sometimes choose to sing in Spanish just because we love the sound of it a little bit more, and that's what we speak at home, so that's how we want to worship. And when we are singing in Spanish, we've had a couple of people who have challenged us afterwards and say, I think that you should sing in English.
Yeah.
And we don't agree with that.
I mean, it's your language. It's great to embrace it. I just don't understand people like that. If we've just been learning a lot, and it's opened my mind a lot to a lot of things, and it's just, people really are like weird about just cultures in general, and it just upsets me, because my sister mm-hmm. had, my mom, you know, had a black boyfriend, and then she got pregnant, and my sister's black.
Okay.
So it was my brother's light skin, so I've always been in that.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily, you know what I'm saying? Not necessarily in their culture, but I've always been attached to it because that's what they believed in. So it always weirds me out when you tell me that people challenge you for embracing yourself.
Yeah.
Or get mad at a grown man for kneeling for what he believes. It just upsets me because that's like irritating. Yeah. You know, like if me as a white male, if I was to speak out about something, what I've seen, people would listen. It's not that they feel safe, but it's just like, oh, it's a white man. He has an opinion. Let's listen.
Mm-hmm.
But when, let's say my older brother, for example, a light-skinned man with curls, he was to speak out about something.
Yeah.
Just from what I've seen in America, nobody will listen or nobody will give attention to it because it's like he doesn't have an opinion. So it just irritates me. So,
it's a sad thing. You're coming to get familiar with that idea that we've talked about privilege, right, in class. And you've got some evidence that, like, just you saying something carries a lot more weight or a lot more believability, credibility, than if it comes from somebody who just because of some extra melanin in their skin, right, or the shape of their hair, it doesn't matter as much to other people. And so I'm glad that you're seeing that. We need that more.
Can I share a story my sister told me when I was younger?
Absolutely.
She was an honor student, like on the principal's list and all that. And this teacher, he was a man, envied her for some reason. Envied her talent, I guess. She was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like colleges looking at her for her brain. Ooh. But she was also a star athlete too. So it was, he failed her on purpose because she was African American. And he told everyone, told my mother, told us when I was a young kid. I didn't understand it then. I was like, what? Because I lived with her. So I was like, she's not black to me. She's my sister. And he got fired and obviously all that. But it ruined her high school career a lot because she was an honor student, and all of a sudden, she's just getting bad grades. So it was just like, it wasn't one of those times where like, oh, my daughter never gets bad grades. We really looked into it,
mm-hmm.
and he was a racist man, and it was just it shocked my sister, shocked my family because we knew how she was, and we didn't know this man at all, and he doesn't even know us. So it was just, it's cool to know, not cool. It's interesting to know that people have that experiences. Like actually, I witnessed it. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Have it happen to me, but it's an experience you never forget because you're like, wow.
Seems like it made a big impression on you.
Well, it just makes a big impression on anybody.
Yeah.
Like if it was to happen to you or happen to
anybody
in this class that has a darker skin tone, I would be like, really? Wow. Now I'm older and I understand, I'll speak upon it and be behind someone, but younger, when you're younger, you don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
Because it was just something you lived with.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I asked you this a while ago, too. Does your view on America, how you view America and its, you know, just its flag and its symbols, does it affect your teaching or style of teaching in any way? And does it inspire you to teach?
Yeah, definitely. I think that my view on America, in a nutshell, is that we are not yet the country that we can be.
Yeah.
The idea of make America great again, for me, is a little bit condescending. No, it's very condescending, actually, because who was it great for in the past?
Yeah.
And it's basically a coded way of saying make America great for white people, because it's worked best in the past for people who were hoarding power. And I think of, like, looking at America, at least, number one, as something that we've got to acknowledge our problematic past.
Yeah.
I don't know if this country will survive the things that we're going through right now. I would love to think that we can, and I want to work for it, although I don't know how. I don't know the path forward. But in terms of my teaching style, I view my job as a teacher, at least part of that, is helping students to develop their voice, helping students to feel a sense of empowerment with an ability to change or shape or divert the attention of the teacher. And that's why I love to take a student's comments, and if they seem relevant, shove my plans aside and say, let's talk about this instead. Because students should have the ability to affect the outcome of their environment.
Yeah.
And so I see that as both good teaching, but also good practice for participating in a democracy.
Yeah.
And I try to create moments for that. At my best, I succeed. And at my worst moments, I'll often feel that I am controlling the classroom too much and I'm speaking too much.
I would like to say I've never heard a teacher want a class to be a democracy. It's always been teacher versus students, not mm-hmm. everyone with each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing. I've never heard somebody say that, a teacher wow. say that. That's why I was just like, wow.
I'm not the only one. That's not my idea. But
you express it well. You express student-led grading very well. That's why, or just expressing yourself very well. That's why I wanted to interview in the first place.
I appreciate that.
Last question. How do you feel about teaching altogether?
Altogether. I love it. I love being in this profession. I love being around youth and the energy that comes from being around youth. I sometimes hesitate to say that because it makes me sound like a vampire or a predator or something. But you know, I really do love being around youth. I love the fact that I get to talk about and share and initiate people into things that interest me too. So it's a little bit greedy in that sense. But when I'm teaching ethnic studies, I've been studying some of this stuff since I was 8 years old. When I'm teaching Spanish, the same, like it's my own culture. I'll pick cultural things that I grew up with to share with students. And so I love that ability to share and to be an authentic me in public. I should also say, like, on the whole, as teaching, I worry greatly about just how this pandemic has affected the teaching profession.
Yeah.
This has been the hardest time of my career. And I'm planning on toughing this out as best as I can. But Quentin, there have been moments this semester that I've wanted to cry, that I've wanted to break down and just cry because I am not seeing what I'm hoping for in terms of...
productivity?
Well, productivity kind of, but just engagement. Like I'll ask a question sometimes, or I'm hoping to be able to do a certain kind of activity that I know generates interest from the students and involvement. And when I'm met with apathy or with just blank stares, you know, and I don't want to blame the students for it because we're all products of our times and our environment.
Yeah.
And so I'm just mad that things have gone on as long as they have.
Yeah.
I'd love for it to end soon, safely and properly, and at the same time I'm really tired. I've been going to sleep a lot earlier than I usually do. Anything that's good, but it's because I'm so tired when I get home.
Yeah.
And it's been really, really tough for me, but I'm planning on toughing it out. I'm hoping and I have faith that things will get better.
Yeah, COVID's been a pretty hard thing on anybody, and anyone who's witnessed it is strong, and I'm glad that you're, you know, still, you know, helping us out and being your teacher, because on anybody, it's strong. Just my experiences, kids' experiences, your experiences as well. Just COVID's been real rough, so there's no need to feel ashamed that you're tired. It's just, I'm glad you can express that to me, because, you know, it's relatable for everybody.
Thank you for validating my feelings on that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having this wonderful interview again.
It's been a pleasure.
Is it Paul?